Chapter 4 of Foundation Stones to Happiness and Success. Recording by Andrea Fiore. Foundation Stones to Happiness and Success by James Allen. Chapter 4. True Speech. Truth is known by practice only. Without sincerity there can be no knowledge of truth, and true speech is the beginning of all sincerity. Truth in all its native beauty and original simplicity consists in abandoning and not doing all those things which are untrue, and embracing and doing all those things which are true. True speech is therefore one of the elementary beginnings in the life of truth. Falsehood, and all forms of deception, slander, and all forms of evil speaking, these must be totally abandoned and abolished before the mind can receive even a small degree of spiritual enlightenment. The liar and slanderer is lost in darkness. So deep is his darkness that he cannot distinguish between good and evil, and he persuades himself that his lying and evil speaking are necessary and good, that he is thereby protecting himself and other people. Let the would-be student of higher things look to himself and beware of self-delusion. If he is given to uttering words that deceive or to speaking evil of others, if he speaks in insincerity, envy, or malice, then he has not yet begun to study higher things. He may be studying metaphysics, or miracles, or psychic phenomena, or astral wonders. He may be studying how to commune with invisible beings, to travel invisibly during sleep, or to produce curious phenomena. He may even study spirituality theoretically and as a mere book study. But if he is a deceiver and a backbiter, the higher life is hidden from him. For the higher things are these: uprightness, sincerity, innocence, purity, kindness, gentleness, faithfulness, humility, patience, pity, sympathy, self-sacrifice, joy, goodwill, love. And he who would study them, know them, and make them his own, must practice them. There is no other way. Lying and evil speaking belong to the lowest forms of spiritual ignorance, and there can be no such thing as spiritual enlightenment while they are practiced. Their parents are selfishness and hatred. Slander is akin to lying, but it is even more subtle, as it is frequently associated with indignation. And by assuming more successfully the appearance of truth, it ensnares many who would not tell a deliberate falsehood. For there are two sides to slander. There is the making of repeating of it, and there is the listening to it and acting upon it. The slanderer would be powerless without a listener. Evil words require an ear that is receptive to evil in which they may fall before they can flourish. Therefore, he who listens to a slanderer, who believes it, and allows himself to be influenced against the person whose character and reputation are defamed, is in the same position as the one who framed or repeated the evil report. The evil speaker is a positive slanderer. The evil listener is a passive slanderer. The two are cooperators in the propagation of evil. Slander is a common vice and a dark and deadly one. An evil report begins in ignorance and pursues its blind way in darkness. It generally takes its rise in a misunderstanding. Someone feels that he or she has been badly treated, and filled with indignation and resentment, unburdens himself to his friends and others in vehement language, exaggerating the enormity of the supposed offense on account of the feeling of injury by which he is possessed. He is listened to and sympathized with. The listeners, without hearing the other person's version of what has taken place, and on no other proof than the violent words of an angry man or woman, become cold in their attitude towards the one spoken against, and repeat to others what they have been told, and as such repetition is always more or less inaccurate, a distorted and altogether untrue report is soon passing from mouth to mouth. It is because slander is such a common vice that it can work the suffering and injury that it does. It is because so many, not deliberate wrongdoers, and unconscious of the nature of the evil into which they so easily fall, are ready to allow themselves to be influenced against one whom they have hitherto regarded as honorable, that an evil report can do its deadly work. Yet its work is only amongst those who have not altogether acquired the virtue of true speech, the cause of which is a truth-loving mind. When one who has not entirely freed himself from repeating or believing an evil report about another hears of an evil report about himself, his mind becomes a flame and burning resentment, his sleep is broken, and his peace of mind is destroyed. He thinks the cause of all his suffering is the other man, and what the other man has said about him, and is ignorant of the truth, that the root and cause of his suffering lies in his own readiness to believe an evil report about another. The virtuous man, he who has attained to true speech, and whose mind is sealed against even the appearance of evil speaking, cannot be injured and disturbed by any evil reports concerning himself, and although his reputation may for a time be stained in the minds of those who are prone to suggestions of evil, his integrity remains untouched, and his character unsoiled, for no one can be stained by the evil deeds of another, but only by his own wrongdoing. And so, through all misrepresentation, misunderstanding, and contumely, he is untroubled and unrevengeful, his sleep is undisturbed, and his mind remains in peace. True speech is the beginning of a pure, wise, and well-ordered life. If one would attain to purity of life, if he would lessen the evil and suffering of the world, let him abandon falsehood and slander in thought and word. Let him avoid even the appearance of these things, for there are no lies and slanders so deadly as those which are half-truths. And let him not be a participant in evil speaking by listening to it. Let him also have compassion on the evil speaker, knowing how such a one is binding himself to suffering and unrest. For no liar can know the bliss of truth, no slanderer can enter into the kingdom of peace. By the words which he utters is a man's spiritual condition declared. By these also is he finally and infallibly adjudged. For as the divine master of the Christian world has declared, "By thy words shalt thou be justified, and by thy words shalt thou be condemned." End of chapter 4. Recording by Andrea Fiore. Chapter 5 of Foundation Stones to Happiness and Success. Recording by Andrea Fiore. Foundation Stones to Happiness and Success by James Allen. Chapter 5. Equal-Mindedness. To be equally minded is to be peacefully minded, for a man cannot be said to have arrived at peace who allows his mind to be disturbed and thrown off the balance by occurrences. The man of wisdom is dispassionate and meets all things with the calmness of a mind in repose and free from prejudice. He is not a partisan, but having put away passion, and is always at peace with himself and the world, not taking sides nor defending himself, but sympathizing with all. The partisan is so convinced that his own opinion and his own side is right, and that all goes contrary to them is wrong, that he cannot think there is any good in the other opinion and the other side. He lives in a continual fever of attack and defense, and has no knowledge of the quiet peace of an equal mind. The equal-minded man watches himself in order to check and overcome even the appearance of passion and prejudice in his mind, and by so doing he develops sympathy for others, and comes to understand their position and particular state of mind. And as he comes to understand others, he perceives the folly of condemning them and opposing himself to them. Thus there grows up in his heart a divine charity which cannot be limited, but which is extended to all things that live and strive and suffer. When a man is under the sway of passion and prejudice, he is spiritually blind. Seeing nothing but good in his own side and nothing but evil in another, he cannot see anything as it really is, not even his own side, and not understanding himself, he cannot understand the hearts of others, and thinks it is right that he should condemn them. Thus there grows up in his heart a dark hatred for those who refuse to see him and who condemn him in return. He becomes separated from his fellow man and confines himself to a narrow torture chamber of his own making. Sweet and peaceful are the days of the equal-minded man, fruitful in good and rich in manifold blessings. Guided by wisdom, he avoids those pathways which lead down to hatred and sorrow and pain, and takes those which lead up to love and peace and bliss. The occurrences of life do not trouble him, nor does he grieve over those things which are regarded by mankind as grievous, but which must befall all men in the ordinary course of nature. He is neither elated by success nor cast down by failure. He sees the events of his life arranged in their proper proportions, and can find no room for selfish wishes or vain regrets, for vain anticipations and childish disappointments. And how is this equal-mindedness, this blessed state of mind and life, acquired? Only by overcoming oneself, only by purifying one's own heart, for the purification of the heart leads to unbiased comprehension. Unbiased comprehension leads to equal-mindedness, and equal-mindedness leads to peace. The impure man is swept helplessly away on the waves of passion. The pure man guides himself into the harbor of rest. The fool says, "I have an opinion." The wise man goes about his business. End of chapter 5. Recording by Andrea Fiore. Chapter 6 of Foundation Stones to Happiness and Success. Recording by Andrea Fiore. Foundation Stones to Happiness and Success by James Allen. Chapter 6. Good Results. A considerable portion of the happenings of life comes to us without any direct choosing on our part, and such happenings are generally regarded as having no relation to our will or character, but as appearing fortuitously, as occurring without a cause. Thus one is spoken of as being lucky and another unlucky, the inference being that each has received something which he never earned, never caused. Deeper thought and a clearer insight into life convinces us, however, that nothing appears without a cause, that cause and effect are always related in perfect adjustment and harmony. That being so, every happening directly affecting us is intimately related to our own will and character, is indeed an effect justly related to a cause having its seat in our consciousness. In a word, involuntary happenings of life are the results of our own thoughts and deeds. This, I admit, is not apparent on the surface, but what fundamental law, even in the physical universe, is so apparent? If thought, investigation, and experiment are necessary to the discovery of the principles which relate one material atom to another, even so are they imperative to the perception and understanding of the mode of action which relate one mental condition to another, and such modes, such laws, are known by the right doer, by him who has acquired an understanding mind by the practice of true actions. We reap as we sow. Those things which come to us, though not by our own choosing, are by our own causing. The drunkard did not choose the delirium tremens or insanity which overtook him, but he caused it by his own deeds. In this case the law is plain to all minds, but where it is not so plain, it is none the less true. Within ourselves is the deep-seated cause of all our sufferings, the spring of all our joys. Alter the inner world of thoughts, and the other world of events will cease to bring you sorrow. Make the heart pure, and to you all things will be pure, all occurrences happy and in true order. Within yourselves deliverance must be sought. Each man his prison makes. Each hath such lordship as the loftiest ones. Nay, for with powers above, around, below, as with all flesh and whatsoever lives, act maketh joy or woe. Our life is good or bad, enslaved or free, according to its causation in our thoughts. For out of these thoughts spring all our deeds, and from these deeds come equitable results. We cannot seize good results violently, like a thief, and claim and enjoy them, but we can bring them to pass by setting in motion the cause within ourselves. Men strive for money, sigh for happiness, and would gladly possess wisdom, yet fail to secure these things, while they see others to whom these blessings appear to come unbidden. The reason is that they have generated causes which prevent the fulfillment of their wishes and efforts. Each life is a perfectly woven network of causes and effects, of efforts, or lack of efforts, and results, and good results can only be reached by initiating good efforts, good causes. The doer of true actions, who pursues sound methods, grounded on right principles, will not need to strive and struggle for good results. They will be there as the effects of his righteous rule of life. He will reap the fruit of his own actions, and the reaping will be in gladness and peace. This truth of sowing and reaping in the moral sphere is a simple one, yet men are slow to understand and accept it. We have been told by a wise one that the children of darkness are wiser in their day than the children of light. And who would expect, in the material world, to reap and eat where he had not sown and planted? Or who would expect to reap wheat in the field where he had sown tares, and would fall to weeping and complaining if he did not? Yet this is just what men do in the spiritual field of mind and deed. They do evil and expect to get from it good, and when the bitter harvesting comes in all its ripened fullness, they fall into despair and bemoan the hardness and injustice of their lot, usually attributing it to the evil deeds of others, refusing even to admit the possibility of its cause being hidden in themselves, in their own thoughts and deeds. The children of light, those who are searching for the fundamental principles of right living, with a view to making themselves into wise and happy beings, must train themselves to observe this law of cause and effect in thought, word, and deed, as implicitly and obediently as the gardener obeys the law of sowing and reaping. He does not even question the law. He recognizes and obeys it. When the wisdom which he instinctively practices in his garden is practiced by men in the garden of their minds, when the law of the sowing of deeds is so fully recognized that it can no longer be doubted or questioned, then it will be just as faithfully followed by the sowing of those actions which will bring about a reaping of happiness and well-being for all. As the children of matter obey the laws of matter, so let the children of spirit obey the laws of spirit, for the law of matter and the law of spirit are one, but they are two aspects of one thing, the outworking of one principle in opposite directions. If we observe right principles or causes, wrong effects cannot possibly accrue. If we pursue sound methods, no shoddy thread can find its way into our web of life. No rotten brick enter into the building of our character to render it insecure. And if we do true actions, what but good results can come to pass? For to say that good causes can produce bad effects is to say that nettles can be reaped from a sowing of corn. He who orders his life along the moral lines thus briefly enunciated will attain to such a state of insight and equilibrium as to render him permanently happy and perennially glad. All his efforts will be seasonally planted. All the issues of his life will be good. And though he may not become a millionaire, as indeed he will have no desire to become such, he will acquire the gift of peace, and true success will wait upon him as its commanding master. End of chapter 6. Recording by Andrea Fiore. www.andreafiore.name. End of Foundation Stones to Happiness and Success by James Allen.
Thank you for listening to this episode of our podcast. We will be really thankful if you support us by clicking the link in the description so that we continue to create amazing content for you.